Awesome. Well, welcome to Hoboken Grace. For those of you who are with us for the first time, I just want to echo what Justin said. Hopefully you've made yourself right at home. And throughout the month of October, you're going to hear a lot from us about dinner group leadership. And sometimes this idea of leading a dinner group can be a little overwhelming. And we think that we have to have it all together. We think that we have to have everything in place. But as the video is pointing out, God's used some pretty interesting people in the past. Now, if you are a serial killer, we don't necessarily want you to apply. But what we're trying to say here in the video is that we want to be able to connect with people who are like us. And people who, you know, as we're looking at dinner groups is not about someone who has it all together leading people who are. And dinner group is about a group of people getting together who are struggling and working to be able to figure out how do we love God and love the people around us as best as we possibly can. And so as we come to this point as a church, we realize that the church has grown substantially over the past year, and our dinner group leaders are working to reproduce themselves and raise up leaders, and our coaches are working to reproduce themselves and raise up leaders. But the truth is right now we need 20 dinner group leaders here at Hoboken Grace if we're going to do what we need to do to take care of our family. And so we're going to be praying throughout this month at every single meeting that we have that God would provide dinner group leaders. And we're going to be bringing this to you over and over and over again, because some of you are here, and the truth is that the next step for you probably is that you step into that dinner group leadership position, but you're allowing the doubts in your mind and this idea that, well, you have to have it all together to keep you from doing that. And so we want to break that down in your life. And even if you're not sure if you are meant to be in this position or whether this would really fit who you are, I'd encourage you, if you have even the slightest bit of interest, find out. Check it out. Just email Nick. Stop by one of our connection points. They're marked by the orange lamps in the back. And those are manned by our concierge team, which is made up of current dinner group leaders. You can ask them questions about what that looks like. And we're trying to just kind of amp up how we're reproducing those leaders, building into those leaders, and finding those leaders. And so if you have any interest in that at all, make sure that you connect back there at the connection points or email Nick to get involved. For those of you who are with us for the first time, right now we're in the middle of this conversation called Restoring Relationships. And we're looking at how we can love well, how we can love as best as we possibly can those that God's placed into our lives. And from the beginning of the conversation, we've looked at how if you're going to love well, then it's going to require both time and energy. And we've been interacting with these things and trying to figure out, well, how do I manage my time and energy so that I can love well? How do I utilize that to the best of my ability to be able to care for the people around me? And we've walked through a lot of practical things that we can begin to put in place in our lives as far as scheduling our time and prioritizing relationships and really digging down into figuring out, what is it going to take for me to be able to love my wife well? What is it going to take for me to be able to love my kids well? What is it going to take for me to be able to love my friends well and my coworkers well? And then being very intentional about that time and how we place that time and what that time looks like. Right? And as we've walked through this, we've kind of walked through a lot to work through as far as loving the people around you. And I don't know if you're like me, but I've been sitting down and trying to put these things in place. And so I've been trying to schedule that time, and I've been trying to figure out, okay, what is my technology plan going to be, and how do I begin to put that in place? And as I've been working through that, to be honest with you, it's not easy. And there's points at which I'm working through this, and I'm thinking to myself, man, this is just a tremendous amount of work. It takes a lot of work. And it's brought me back to that conversation we had earlier, this conversation about whether or not love comes naturally or not, and this lie that we believe that it's just supposed to happen, it's just supposed to fall in place. And for most of us, we're kind of moving through life hoping that we accidentally love well as opposed to intentionally loving well. And as I'm working through this, there's this lie that's showing up again that, man, it's not supposed to be this much work. But the truth is, if you want to love well, it takes work. It takes a tremendous amount of effort. And I'm working through this and trying to figure out how this is going to look. And it's constantly calling me back to this question. Okay, Chris, what do you really want? What do you really want? Because it's going to take work. Do you really want this? Do you really want to love well? Or would you just kind of like to love well? I would like to do that, but if it really takes that much work, I'm not really sure. What do you really want? And I love this question, what do you want? I see Jesus ask it throughout the New Testament over and over and over again as he steps into people's lives. He's asking this question, what do you want? And I love the question because it strikes to our purpose and our mission and our values. So what is it that you think you're really here to do? What is it that is actually valuable to you as you move through this life? And I'm working through this, and it's work, and there's this side of me that's just like, I'm just going to give up. I'm not going to follow through. And I go back to this question, what is it that you really want? What is it that you really value? And today, I want to spend a little bit of time there, and I want to ask you, because if you're working through what we've been talking about, if you're looking at, okay, what are the relationships that I need to prioritize, and what's the amount of time and energy that's required for those relationships, and how do I schedule in that time, and how do I use technology to actually help me to love better as opposed to keeping me from being where I am and loving the people that I'm with, and putting those plans in place, then you're going to be, I believe, where I am, where you're confronting the fact that this is just, it takes a lot of work. And in that, I think you're going to have to ask this question, what is it that you really want? And is this idea of loving well something that you truly value, that you really want, or is it just something that you kind of want? And the people that you want to love well, are they people that you really value? Or do we value something else more? What is it that we really want? What is it that's really valuable to us? Because I think if we're going to get to the point where we learn how to actually love well, then we have to actually value people. And the people around us have to become unbelievably valuable to us. And today I want to bring to you this question. What is it that you really want? What is it that's really valuable to you? And do you really value those people that God's brought into your life? And I think for a lot of us, our initial answer is absolutely. Absolutely, I value people. I love people. I love to be around people. I love being in relationships with people and connecting with people. I love people. For most of us, that's where we are. Now, a few of you may be here and you just don't like people. I connect with you 100%. I've been where you are. But for most of us, I value people. Of course I value people. But I want to ask you to ask the question on a little deeper level. And I think there are all sorts of different things. There's probably a myriad of different things in our lives that keep us from actually valuing people. Some of them are really obvious, and then some of them are a little more subtle. And we're not going to be able to talk through all of them because, like I said, it's probably an unlimited list. But I want to talk about a few of them in particular. And I know in my life, like I said, for those of you who are here and you don't like people, I know in my life there was a time where I just didn't value people because it seemed like every time that I invested in someone, they just seemed to betray me or walk away from me, abandon me. And I remember growing up, I watched my dad pour his life into the lives of the people around him, and it seemed that every chance that they got, they would stab him in the back or they would abandon him. And so as I watched this play out, I came to the point in my life where I just stopped valuing people. I just thought, this is a complete waste of time. Building into, investing in people is a complete waste of time. They're just going to betray you or abandon you. What good is it actually to build into people? And some of you may be here today. I don't think this is where a lot of us are, but some of you may be there. And my conversation with God, as he began to wrestle through this with me, and the thing that he began to show me over and over again, it's just this powerful truth that the truth is, at the end of this whole thing, there's only one thing that's going to last. There's only one thing that's going to continue, and that's people. And so if you want to actually do something that's going to last, that's going to be meaningful, if you don't want to waste your life, then there's really only one thing that's going to last, and that's people. And he began to pull me out of that self-absorbed life where I was just living for me, and I really only valued people for what they could do for me or accomplish for me, and if you couldn't accomplish anything for me, then I would just discard you and move on. And he began to show me that all these things that I was working for and all these things that I thought was valuable and I was pouring my life into, that they were all going to disappear one day. They were all going to be gone. And all that was going to matter and all that was going to be left is the people. And I think that's a powerful truth for those of you who are here and you've just kind of given up on people. And sometimes it shows up in that we're just living for ourselves, we're just consumed with ourselves. And other times it shows up in that we're living for something outside of ourselves that's just meaningless. And so we're living for success. And if it comes between valuing a person or achieving success, I'm always going to achieve success at the expense of the person. Or experiences. And we value these experiences. This is a big, big thing in our culture. Where I want to see this, and I want to go there, and I want to do this. And we value that more than people. And so we live our lives to see these things and to accomplish these things and to build these things at the expense of the people in our lives. Because we don't value people. We value these things. This stuff, sometimes it's material things. Sometimes it's the places we're going to go and things that we're going to see. It was interesting, I had a conversation with someone a couple months ago, I guess just about a year ago, and they were talking about consumerism and how consumerism impacts culture and how a culture that buys into consumerism doesn't need for someone else to destroy it. It will actually destroy itself. And once a culture buys into consumerism, they begin to believe that stuff, things, material items, that these things are more valuable than people, they will slowly but surely eliminate themselves from the face of the planet. Because what happens is that inside that culture, all of a sudden couples begin to limit the number of children that they're having so that they can travel more, so that they can see more things, so that they can have a bigger house, so that they can live comfortably, so that their one child can live comfortably, so that they can afford the best education. And they become obsessed with all of this stuff. And in the process, they simply eliminate themselves because they have fewer and fewer children. And the culture will literally kill itself off. And for some of us, we're here, and I don't think that's a huge number of people, but for some of us, the truth is we value just simply ourselves. We're living for ourselves, and for others, maybe it's a little different that we're living for success, or we're living for achievement, or we're living for what we're going to have, and we value all these things over people. And I think in that conversation, the truth that God has brought to me over and over again is just this simple fact that all of that stuff is going to go away. And there's going to come a day when it's just simply going to all end. And no one's going to remember what you did. No one's going to remember what you accomplished. No one's going to remember the awards. The house is going to be gone. The wealth is going to be gone. It's all going to be gone. And all that's going to be left is people. But I don't want to spend a lot of time on those two because I think that those two are addressed quite frequently. And I think they're easy to see in our lives. And if you have someone who loves you in your life and who cares enough to have those difficult conversations with you, I think they'll be able to see it and be able to interact with you about where you are and how to begin to value people. I actually want to spend our time on something else that I think keeps us from valuing people that's a little more subtle. It's actually almost deceptive. Because in valuing this, it looks like we're valuing people. And on the surface level, it looks like the epitome of valuing people. But in fact, we value something else. And it looks like we're living our lives for people, and we're surrounded by people, and we're engaged in all of these different relationships, and we think that we're valuing people. But it's tricky. Because in fact, we're valuing something else. In fact, we're actually valuing relationships. And there's a big difference between valuing relationships and valuing people. It's unbelievably subtle. And it can trick us, it can deceive us into believing that we actually value people. But we don't. And so I want to be married. I'm driven by my desire to have this relationship, this emotional connection. And for some reason, I believe that this is going to satisfy me or this is going to bring me something. And I value ultimately this relationship. And so therefore, I pursue this person. Not because I value that person, but because I value the relationship. I interact with this with parents a lot. And as parents sometimes, or as we're making this decision of whether we're going to become parents, sometimes we value this relationship of parenthood and we want to have a child who views us this way, who loves us this way, that we can connect with in this way. We actually have no desire to value a child and reorientate our lives around that child. We value the relationship. And so we decide to have children. And on the surface, it can look like we value people. It's very subtle. When in fact, what we value is relationships. And so I'm deeply, deeply concerned. Deeply concerned about my marriage. I'm just not concerned about my wife. I care deeply about my friendships. I just don't necessarily care about my friends. I want to make sure that I have a good relationship with my kids, but that's not necessarily the same as caring for and valuing my kids. We think we value people, when in fact, we value relationships. And so in the midst of the situation, rather than doing what is best for the person, we do what is best for the emotional connection or the relationship. And all of a sudden, we begin to place that above everything else. And when that happens, everything gets out of whack. When that happens, all of a sudden, almost every decision that you make begins to become destructive. And so you find yourself in a situation and in a relationship that you know that you need to step out of for the good of everyone involved in the relationship, that you know you need to step out of it. It's going to be best for them. It's going to be best for everyone involved in it. But what you value is not them. What you value is the relationship. And so you stay. Or we step into a marriage and we make a commitment to someone, but that emotional connection is not what we hoped it would be. It's not what we dreamed it would be. It's not satisfying us the way that we thought it would satisfy us. And so I just replace that person. Because what I value is the relationship. And if you don't live up to it, well, I don't actually value you. And we're in these friendships where we are watching our friends walk straight into destruction. And we just let them go. And we won't have the difficult conversations. And we won't say what needs to be said. Because ultimately, I don't value you. I just want this connection. This relationship. It's subtle. But it's unbelievably destructive. And it is nothing like the way that Jesus Christ loves you and me. Because we call it love. But what we actually love is the relationship, not the person. And that love is nothing like Christ's love. And what I want to do today is I want to show you a couple things about the way that Christ loves you and me that should challenge us in the way that we value the people around us and how we move into these relationships. Because I believe that it's God's value of you that is driving him to pursue you, not the fact that he wants a relationship with something or anything. I believe, as a matter of fact, with the way that this story has played out, it's become unbelievably clear that the driving factor in this whole thing is the way that he values you. And I think you see it from the very beginning in the fact that, number one, he doesn't start over. And he had every single opportunity to start over, to just simply recreate a new group of people that he could have a relationship with. And if he approached us the way that so often we approach our friends of, you know what, I'm gonna be your friend as long as everything goes well, but if something goes wrong, then I'm just going to find a new friend. If he approached us the way that we approach our friendships, the truth is that when we stepped out of this relationship with him, that when we walked away from him, he would have just started over. He would have just said, okay, I'm just going to replace you. Because it's not really about you, it's just about this relationship. But he doesn't. And to me, oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. He could have replaced you. He could have replaced you. It would have taken nothing. He could have replaced you. But instead, he valued you. And the scriptures tell us that as you're here today, you are not here on accident. You have been a part of this plan from the very beginning. From the very beginning, you were planned. You've been a part of this plan, and from the very beginning, he has been pursuing you. And he could have walked away, he could have replaced you, but instead, he fought for you. Instead, he valued you. No matter what it would cost him, no matter how much pain he would have to pursue in the process, he valued you. And not just anyone, not just anything, you in particular, you. I want you to listen to this passage. It's found in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 4. It says this. It says, "But God is so rich in mercy, and he loves us so much that even though we were dead because of our sins, he gave us life when he raised Christ from the dead." And Ephesians, Paul's trying to help us understand. Listen, even in the midst of you walking away from him, he valued you. He came for you. This is a different kind of love. And not only do we see it in the fact that he doesn't start over, but then we also see it in that over and over and over again, his decisions in our lives are dictated not based upon what is going to help you in some way, shape, or form feel good about him, but his decisions are constantly based on what's best for you, even if that means that you're going to be mad at him. When we begin to value the relationship over the person, then we don't do anything that's going to, in any way, shape, or form, upset that relationship. And so if it's going to make you feel better about me and we're going to connect more, then I'm going to do it. But if not, then I'm going to kind of shy away from it. Maybe occasionally I'll bring it in, but I'm not going to. This is unbelievably destructive as parents. And this shows up in parenting all the time. And as parents, we want to have that relationship. And so we will not discipline the way that we need to discipline. And we will sacrifice that child so that we can feel good about the relationship. And one of the decisions I have to make all the time in the life of my kids is that, listen, they're not going to like what I have to do here. They're not going to appreciate it. They're not going to like me more. They're not going to love me more. They're not going to want to be around me. But you know what? This is what's best for them. And when you begin to interact with God, you see that this is the way that God interacts with you constantly. And so he's going to say some things that are hard to hear. And sometimes he's going to bring some things into your life that are difficult. And sometimes it's going to mean that you're going to have to wrestle with him for a little bit about what's happening and God, what's going on here and how is this going to work out and where are you and what does this look like? Because his decisions are not made based upon, oh, I just want them to feel really good about me. His decisions are made based upon him constantly trying to bring you to the point where you can experience life to the fullest, where you can be everything that you were created to be. And so he always brings what's best for you. No matter what it costs him. This is what it means to love a person and not a relationship. To step into the lives of our friends and to understand that, you know what, this conversation is going to be hard. And the truth is, they may never talk to me again, but I love them far too much. I love them far too much to watch them walk into destruction. We value them. I want you to listen to this passage where Jesus is talking about the way that God values us. Matthew 6:25, it says, "That is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food or drink or enough clothes to wear. Isn't life more than food and your body more than clothing? Look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest or store food in barns, for your heavenly Father feeds them. And aren't you far more valuable to him than they are?" He values you. And I think sometimes in our relationship with God, we wish that he would value the relationship because we want it to just be what we want to hear and just everything feel good. But as he moves into your life, this is one of the most amazing things that you can count on over and over and over again. He is always going to do what's best for you. And so you see him with the Pharisees and you see him and all these different situations throughout Jesus Christ's life. And I love this about Jesus Christ. And I did not understand this until late in my life. And I used to look at the way that Jesus Christ interacted with the Pharisees, and I thought to myself, wow, he just doesn't like those guys. He doesn't want anything to do with them. But then as I began to interact with who God was, I said, that doesn't fit. Because the God I know and the God that the scriptures are describing is a God who loves everyone. He doesn't want anyone to perish, including the Pharisee. But you see him step into their lives and he's saying to them, listen, you travel over land and sea to make a convert, and in the process you make them twice the sons of hell that you are. And in the conversation, it looks like he doesn't like them at all, but when you dig deeper, what you find out is he knew that what was best for them is for them to finally realize that they were lost. And so even if they hated him for saying it, he was going to do what was best for them. What's best for them. And ultimately, I think this is where we can really see in our own relationships whether or not we value the relationship or whether we actually value the person. Are your decisions being made based upon what is going to be best for your marriage or best for your wife? What is going to be best for your friendship or best for your friend? I know in my life, I often make decisions based on what is going to be best for my friendship. Even though it may be at the expense of my friend. But that is not who God is. That is not the way God has valued you. And then not only do we see him constantly doing what is best, but then also, number three, you see that he never settles. He never settles. And what I mean by that is this. When you begin to value the relationship over the person, when the relationship is comfortable, you don't want anything to change. I don't know if you've experienced this before. I have conversations with people about this. Actually, over the past 2 years, I've had quite a few of these conversations because these couples will begin to be part of Hoboken Grace, and one of them will begin to start growing. And they'll start taking steps towards God. And all of a sudden, the other member of this couple will come in to meet with me and say, you know, I'm really frustrated by what's going on. And they'll start to describe to me what's going on. I'll say, well, isn't that great? I mean, they're growing. And they'll say this to me. And people have said this to me quite frequently over the past 2 years. Yes, but I liked it the way it was. Okay. I don't want her to grow. I liked the relationship the way it was. I don't want him to grow. I liked the relationship the way it was. We value the relationship, not the person. But that's not the way God is with you, because God steps into your life and says, no, 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 we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop. Let's go. Let's go. I'm going to help you grow. I'm going to help you. Here's what the next step is. And he's constantly trying to build into us, trying to help us experience the most abundant life possible, even if that means shaking things up a little bit, even if that means that the relationship has to change, even if that means that we have to walk through some difficult things together, because he's never satisfied with the relationship. It's always about how he can help you grow more and more and more and more and more. And we find ourselves in a situation where we're satisfied with the relationship that we have with anyone. I believe it should be a red flag, because in that moment we should ask ourselves, wait, am I actually in this for what's best for them, how I can help them grow, or am I just in this for this emotional connection? Do I actually value them? Because when we value them, we never stop trying to help them grow. We never stop trying to build into them, to see them live out their potential, to be everything that God created them to be. And you look at this relationship that we have with God. I want to take you to another passage again where God's just communicating to us how he values us, that it's not just that he values anything or anyone, but that he values you. He's trying to build into you. It's driven by you as an individual and his passion for you. Matthew 18, verse 10 through 14 says this. It says, "Beware that you don't look down on any of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven," and he's talking about this little child at this point, "I tell you that in heaven their angels are always in the presence of my heavenly Father. If a man has 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others on the hill and go out and search for the one that is lost? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he will rejoice over it more than the 99 that didn't wander away. In the same way, it is not my heavenly Father's will that even one of these little ones should perish." He says, this isn't just about the 99, it's about the individuals. It's not just about having something, it's about the individual. And in this conversation, he's got this child, and he sets this child in the middle of it. He says, "Listen, I want for you to understand how valuable this one is to me. Not just to anyone, this one and that one. For you to understand how much God values you." If we want to love well, then we have to be the ones who bring the love that we've experienced from Jesus Christ to the world around us. And I believe that when you look at the way that he's loved us, at the core of it, is this value for people. And the truth is, as we walk through this conversation, there aren't three steps that I can give you that you can walk out and just begin to put this in place, because this is more, it's a shift in perspective. It's something that we have to be aware of and alert to all the time. But my challenge to you as you walk out of here today and as you walk into this week and you continue this journey of loving well and trying to figure out, okay, how can I love to the best of my ability? My challenge to you is to begin to look at the people in your life and to ask yourself this question: do I actually value him? Or do I just value this relationship? Do I actually value her, or do I just value dating? And to begin to look the people that God's placed in your life in the eyes, and to decide in yourself that you are going to do what Jesus Christ did for you. I'm going to value you because you are valuable to both me and God. Value people. And we have this unbelievable opportunity to move into the lives of one another and to display to one another how God has valued us. Value people. And I believe when we do, we'll take one more step in what it means to love well. Will you pray with me? Father, as we've walked through this, this shift and what it is that drives us towards people in the way in which we interact with those around us, Father, I pray first and foremost for every single person here that they would be able to understand even just the shadow of how you valued them, of how rather than replacing them, you pursued them, how over and over again you just continued to do what is best for them. How you're moving into their lives and not just settling with a connection, but that you are pursuing in their lives their absolute potential. A life is abundant and full. Where they finally see and know who they were created to be. Father, I pray that they would know that. And Father, only your Spirit can do that. And then, Father, I pray that you would open our eyes to those situations where we're valuing the relationship and not the person. I pray that you would open our eyes to the people who are standing right before us, that we would see how valuable they are to you, and we would begin to treat them that way, that we would begin to bring into their lives that value. We would begin to value them the way that you've valued us, the way that you value them. Father, what we want is to love well, to love you well, and to love those around us well. I pray that you would continue to show us what that means and lead us to where that is our reality. In Jesus' name, amen.